Welcome to The More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy we get from American politics, or as we like to call it, real debate without the hate. Hi, I'm Kevin Kelton. I'm a moderate Democrat living in Los Angeles, California.
I'm Cliff Dunn. I'm a Republican living in Newport News, Virginia.
Hi, I'm Greg Matuszak. You're under the weather, liberal Democrat from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Hi there, I'm DJ McGuire from Suffolk, Virginia. I'm a refugee from the Republican Party. Thankfully, the Democrats let me in.
I'm Rebecca Kushmider, and I'm one of the Democrats who welcomed DJ in. The More Perfect Union is one of the fastest rising podcasts on iTunes, and the More Perfect Union podcast can also be found on iHeartRadio, YouTube, and at our website, moreperfectunionpodcast.com. So, since we are talking about refugees and who's letting who in, does anybody want to start talking a little bit about the Muslim ban that might not be a Muslim ban?
You know, for as much bluster as they put in as this is the one. This is going to make us safe. And this is the one. It doesn't really hold water that it's going to make us safe. Like, these countries are the ones where all the terrorists are going to come from. All the information shows that these are not the countries that the terrorists come from.
The ban that we're talking about is this executive order where the administration has put a temporary stoppage on accepting refugees from Syria and accepting new visa applications, I think, from or blocking travel from seven other countries that are a majority Muslim. And then the president stepped in and said, well, we'll give special priority to religious minorities, particularly Christians, because they're a persecuted class in those countries. And what the thing is these are 90-day bans. They're not permanent. They're not binding for significant lengths of time. And my guess is, what Steve Bannon was thinking when he wrote this, he's like, this is awesome. It'll be a flex of muscle. It'll look like we're really coming out hard against terrorism. You know, we will stop travel from these countries. We'll stop refugee applications. We'll do this for 90 days. We'll say we're reviewing anything. We'll deal with green card people on a case-by-case basis, and it'll look awesome. We're tough on terror. Only the problem is the green card thing completely backfired on them. And, you know, when I first heard that there were detainees at JFK this weekend, my first thought was, okay, in a matter of hours, we're going to have an image of a crying child separated from their parents. Either the child is detained or the parents are detained. And shortly after that, we'll have an image of ACLU lawyers filing suit. The optics are about to blow up. And they did. They completely did. Bannon somehow underestimated the idea that optics might go against his wishes.
Well, when you talk about optics, I think also reality, not just optics, but reality might go against it. This is just coming over the wire as we tape this podcast. Reuters is reporting that five people were killed at a mosque in Quebec City during evening prayers. Now, obviously, that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with what's happening in the politics in this country, but it can very easily be inferred that it might have something to do with it.
Well, I'm also hearing rumors that Iran and Iraq are blocking travel by U.S. nationals into their countries.
There goes my spring break.
Yeah, Kevin, man, that's going to be rough.
Yeah.
You had your burqa ironed and everything.
I had my two-piece burqa. I was all set, yeah.
Okay, we've heard from Kevin. We've heard a bit from Greg. We've heard from Rebecca. I'd like to have Cliff weigh in on this, please.
Thank you, DJ. First of all, on the Quebec City shooting, my immediate thought there is that there's every chance that the Quebec City shooter has as much to do with what's going on in the U.S. right now as the guy who shot Gabby Giffords had to do with the Tea Party.
Right. That's absolutely possible. You're right.
Can we just, like, you know, give a moment for the victims of the Quebec City shooting? Because that's striking me right in the heart. It's really awful.
Yeah.
It really is sad.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. On the one hand, the fact that this is a 90-day ban, it strikes me that they're aiming for something more, I'll say, comprehensive by the end of the 90 days. That being said, to say this was not handled smoothly is an understatement. I could sort of understand Syria, where the question of who is actually entitled to issue visas and passports from Syria is a fun question right now, given that the Syrian government does not control a good chunk of the country. Everybody else, it's a bit of a head-scratcher. Iran, I know, was already a bit of a tricky place for Americans to visit. You could do so, but you basically had to be on a guided tour, so that's almost just a loud gesture on their part. But I've got a friend in Chicago. He's a math professor, and he's been telling me stories about longtime non-resident in Iran Iranian mathematicians who are suddenly, they're going to have to move academic conferences to Windsor or Quebec City or Vancouver or Montreal, because suddenly, academics from Britain who happen to be born in Iran can't make it into the U.S. because of this ban.
And I just want to point out that, somebody said, well, it's only a 90-day ban, but it can very easily be renewed and expanded. So it's not just a 90-day wait and see, or, let's take a deep breath. This could be the beginning of something that's more permanent.
Right, and right now the rumors are flying thick and fast about how everything's being handled in the airports as more and more people come in from these named countries. There are reports of people being taken from Dulles to third locations so that they don't have to be allowed to talk to lawyers. And I don't know how much of this is true and how much of it is going to shake out in the end, but it's really quite alarming that, some of these orders to allow detainees access to lawyers aren't being immediately obeyed. And all these different stays, what they're like five or six now from different judges. It's really bizarre. It didn't have to be this way.
So where do they take these people? When they're detained, where do they take them?
I suspect that at several of the major airports, Dulles, JFK, O'Hare, LAX, there is probably an offsite immigration facility of some sort
But do they put them in a cell? If they have to stay for several days in detention or weeks or more, where are they held?
Damned if I know. This is unprecedented.
Yeah,
you're right. Right.
One thing I will say that stuns me about the optics here is that, and this is one thing I think will get cleaned up for good or ill by the end of the week. Is that they didn't just turn to the airlines and get them to bounce the passengers in London or Cairo or wherever that they act, and that they didn't just turn these people around, that they're actually detaining them. Because it would have been very easy, and I think in terms of the PR cost effective, for them to just simply say, okay, you came here, we've suspended those visas, we're buying you a ticket right back out, and here, we're taking you to the Holiday Inn next to Dulles.
All I know is, right now, every airport Radisson has to have a junior black ops suite.
A complimentary body armor cabinet.
Yeah.
I have to wonder if Steve Bannon even bothered to consult with a lawyer in drafting this.
Hang on, Greg. We actually have something to answer on that. According to, from what I read in CNN this morning, the Department of Homeland Security's lawyers took a look at it. They recommended certain changes, certain interpretations. The White House overruled DHS and shot that down. Apparently, the Department of Justice's Office of Legal Counsel never saw the executive order at all. So essentially, the civil service, to the extent that they had any input on this, the input was rejected and overruled, which now puts us in the unusual situation where, from this point forward, anybody who watches Yes Minister will be very confused because they're going to think Sir Humphrey Appleby is the hero of the story. However, taking a higher look at this, Donald Trump clearly did this for a whole bunch of reasons. One of them, I think, was because he wanted to send the enemy a message. But what the enemy got instead was a how-to manual. If you're trying to get a Somali or a Sudanese terrorist into the country, well, no, you can't do it from Somalia or Sudan for 3 months. But run them through South Sudan, which is just as out of control as Syria ever was, and you're peachy.
Run them through Saudi Arabia.
Well, running Africans through Saudi Arabia.
But isn't this based? But isn't this based on their passport? So it wouldn't matter where you run them through. It would matter their nationality.
It would matter on how well you could fake a passport from Sudan. It would matter on how well you could fake a passport from, and I would actually for folks of Arab descent, they would probably go through Lebanon rather than Saudi Arabia, because not only in Lebanon is everyone a religious minority, which means they could all be given this or that exception under the executive order language, but there are actually Christian groups in Lebanon who are allied with Hezbollah anyway. So it's frankly easy for an Iranian terrorist to run themselves through Lebanon and get a Lebanese passport and off they go. This is basically the mirror image of the gun control debate, where instead it's the right that thinks that somehow with people control we can stop the enemy from wreaking havoc on our shores, where in reality, the enemy is smart enough to do workarounds, and the only ones who suffer are folks who are dealing with political persecution, like green movement veterans of 2009 in Iran who now can't get here because they're being politically persecuted, like Sunni Muslims in Syria who are being religiously persecuted, but because they are the majority faith in Syria, they can't get out. Rudy Giuliani gave an interview, I think it was on Fox News, and God help me, I actually liked this guy once. He was basically told by Trump, find a way to make a de facto Muslim ban, give it the legalese to make it as close to that as possible. And that, if Giuliani is right, that essentially guided what they did here. And what they came up with was a legalese dog's breakfast that doesn't do anything to actually stop the enemy, but sends the absolute wrong message to everybody and actually makes it harder for our friends in the region to come over here and help us.
I would like to point out something ironic here. In Iraq, the Sunni Muslims are the minority. For anybody who remembers the Iraq War, it was the Sunni triangle where we had the most trouble, and it was mostly the Shias who were, you know, willing to work with us. So, irony of ironies, the Shia majority who were willing to help us are now the ones banned. While by technicality under this, the Sunnis who hated our guts are still permissible.
The president really needed or really wanted in his first week to make an X amount of really strong statements, and he really wanted to get this statement out on immigration, but it was done too quickly and poorly. And what
he let somebody be incompetent at this write the order and then ignored the lawyers when they said, ooh, let's fix this.
Yep. Okay. And now that he's put it out too fast, it not only upset, of course, the left, but now it's also upsetting the right, because guys like Lindsey Graham, McCain, and everybody are running from this on the right, and they all hate it. So if he would have just taken a week, talked to the lawyers, and taken time, he probably could have seen something that was constitutional?
Yeah, agreed. And let us remember that George W. Bush waited 4 weeks after 9/11 to begin military operations in Afghanistan because he understood that haste makes waste.
Right.
And he understood the need to be patient. And when people asked him why he had moved in a day, in a week or so, he flatly said, because we're going to do this right instead of doing it fast. Trump decided to do this fast. I'm not sure if there's any way he could do it right. In fact, I don't think there is.
Doing it fast made it worse. And if there was a way, and I don't think there was a way, I think this whole thing stinks. And if there's a march this next week somewhere, I will be at it.
Let's talk about how this fed the resistance, the relentless resistance against the new president and the new administration. As we speak, there are protests going on at airports literally across the country. I think there were 16 at last count that had significant protests going on. And so this is just adding to this idea that the new administration is incredibly unpopular, is misfiring on all fronts, and it may be a doomed administration from the first week.
My first thought here is, at what point do the protesters reach diminishing returns, i.e., you know, at some point, the latest march on the mall, even if it has 200,000 people at it on a weekday, is going to be, you know, page 16 news for the simple fact that we've had X marches of that magnitude over the previous month, et cetera.
Maybe not. Maybe not.
And the other thought I had is, I've got a flight out of JFK in about a week and a half, and I hear these protests at JFK. My only thought is, oh, frack, how much more time do I have to add to go to the airport for this? Who wonders?
Yeah, the question is going to be whether this is the question is going to be, and I think the answer is yes, based on the reactions from Democrats in Congress and even a couple of Republicans in Congress. The question is how this will fuel the political opposition to Trump. There is, there was always going to be an opposition to Trump because there was an opposition party and such. They will have a lot more energy. That much is clear. They will have a lot more passion. That much is clear. It's not quite as clear if they are going to have the precision to hit the right issues. I think this is definitely the right issue to hit, don't get me wrong. But if they're going to basically insist on opposing everything that Trump comes up with just because he puts his name to it, they risk being as mindless and as chaotic and as confused as a lot of the Republican opposition to Barack Obama became in his second term.
As someone on the left, I agree with you, DJ.
And until the Democrats have a clear-cut leader, which we don't. We don't have a leader right now. And until the Democrats have someone or a group of someones, like until a Cory Booker or a Carolyn Kennedy, hint, hint.
Or a Seth Meyers.
Sure. Or until someone steps up, and that may take a year or two or 10, until someone comes up and gives the Democratic Party or the Progressive Party or whatever you want to call it, the millennial progressives, whatever, a voice to aim, it's just a big old, you know, shotgun, and it's going to hit there. But once we find that voice and once we find that magnifying glass, it will be laser-like precision. That's what I believe.
One thing that I think is happening right now is we are in a bit of a game of chicken with the opposition and the administration. Trump is doubling down on this. He had Bannon out spinning like crazy. He had Conway out spinning like crazy. He had, how do you say it, Rince Priebus.
From this point forward, whenever he is out defending a disaster from this administration, he will be known as Rince and Repeat Priebus.
Excellent, DJ. I'll remember that. But anyways, they're all out doubling down on this and saying, no, it's not a ban. It's not this. It's not that. They're pushing down harder. They're not trying to give an inch. And meanwhile, the protests keep going. Democratic lawmakers have been at the airports. They've been at the demonstrations because there were demonstrations not just at airports. I was marching at the White House today. There were demonstrations in Boston, in Battery Park, in New York, in Chicago. And so we're waiting to see who blinks on this particular executive order, who's going to back down. And right now the Democrats have the law on their side, but Trump has the bully pulpit.
Well, and there's one other thing, and that is, you know, it dovetails back with my comment earlier. If these protesters start causing delays at airports on a continual basis, the fact of the matter is a lot of people aren't going to give a flying you-know-what about how just their cause is. They just care that they missed their flight to Disneyland.
Yeah, but the protesters are all in baggage claim, Cliff.
Yes, but it doesn't take much to snarl some of these airports.
No, I understand, but the protesters aren't up by security. They're down in baggage claim at most of these airports. So while it is a risk, it is not an imminent risk.
Well, it says something about how this executive order, which was signed on Friday, essentially nearly wiped out everything that happened between now and then, because there actually were other days in the week. And for example, before this was implemented, Trump signed the executive order reauthorizing the construction of a wall that was authorized by Congress in 2006 and that was slowed down by President Obama. Now, authorization is not appropriation. Congress still has to fund it. But of course, congressional Republican leaders immediately talked about how they could find ways to fund this thing. And at one point, there's even talk of a 20% tariff on Mexican imports, which, for me at least, from a political perspective, was quite edifying because it led to the most robust defense of freer trade that I have seen in at least 10 to 15 years. I saw Republicans and Democrats step up to say, wait a minute, a tariff is a bad idea, and here's why. It is now universally recognized that Americans will be paying this tariff because it is, in fact, a tax on imports. More people are recognizing that the majority of our imports from the rest of the world are not finalized goods, but in fact inputs that are used to produce American products. So taxes on inputs mean not just higher prices, but it means lower wages for folks in those industries and fewer jobs in those industries. More people are recognizing that. More people are seeing that. I think it is an irony here that Donald Trump, in an attempt to restore protectionism to its 19th century zenith, has in fact created the political conditions to make this a majority freer trade country again. And while that wasn't his intention, if that is the result, it will make me very, very happy.
But DJ, that's pretty much like the major issue that made you leave the Republican Party, wasn't it? The fact
it
that
was
That Trump, who was becoming the titular head of the Republican Party, was anti-free trade, right?
I will acknowledge that this issue probably matters more to me than it does the average voter, in that this, for me, this is a touchstone as to whether you are serious about being for limited government or whether it's just whether you're just really trying to defend the economic privilegism of the white welfare state of the 1950s and early 1960s, or as I used to call it on my blog, the party of big government for white people. The simple fact of the matter is that for Trump, this is part of his vision. It's why he won't touch entitlements. It's why he talks about deficit spending as if it was wonderful, as if it were wonderful. It's how he talks. It's why he talks about immigration restrictions as well as trade restrictions. He sees the federal government as leverage to help the wonder white bread Rust Belt and the America of the 1950s and early 1960s somehow magically reappear. The problem is that era was not as wonderful as he thinks it is. We would all acknowledge that. But it essentially creates now two big government parties. It makes the Republican Party a big government party. And yeah, that was why I left.
Yeah. And okay, so now we've talked about some of the more serious issues that came up over the last week, but there's also some fun stuff to talk about in the news. For instance, SNL, as everybody knows, has been on a tear this year, of course, with Alec Baldwin's impression of Donald Trump. But there's also been some controversy backstage this week as well, when SNL writer Katie Rich tweeted a joke about Trump's youngest son, Barron, and was pretty quickly suspended for the offense. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, not only suspended, but indefinitely suspended.
Yeah.
From what I understand.
So, Kevin, I have to ask.
Yeah.
So I've got to ask, you know, what does it say that the fun, light topic of the week involves someone getting suspended or fired?
Well, you know,
it wasn't us who got suspended or fired.
I don't know. I find layoffs to be hysterical. So
they came for the comedy writers, and we did not speak because we were not comedy writers.
Right.
They came for the dot dot dot.
Yeah, the musical variety writers.
look, we've talked about this before. I think like an episode like two for those people who go way back.
By the way, episode 75 of the show. I just wanted to say that. Episode 75.
This is episode 75? Yeah. Wow. Okay. Yeah,
we
yay
like
for
our
us.
Golden anniversary, diamond anniversary. something pretty.
But anyways, Greg, something I interrupted like you. I'm sorry.
But I think, you know, we talked about how the kids of presidents and the kids of pretty much any politicians and families for that part, wives, should be hands off. You know, we don't make fun of Sarah Palin's kids. We don't make fun of Ted Cruz's wife. We don't make fun of these people for their physical attributes or just for them being them, just for them standing there. They don't make policy. They don't make decisions. Nancy Reagan says that she consults an astrologer, but that doesn't really play into what goes on in the White House. At least we pray it doesn't. So those are off-limit topics for comedy, although comedy's
no,
not supposed
not
to have off-limit
topics. No. They're not off-limit topics for comedy. People voluntarily decide not to attack the children of a candidate or of a president, voluntarily decide not to take unnecessary swipes at the spouse of a candidate or a president. But
right.
Katie Rich is a comedy writer. It was her private Twitter feed. Granted, there's some spillover, but there is a question of censorship here and free speech.
Right, but with all free speech, there's going to be consequences.
Yeah, what is that consequence? Losing your job because a comedy writer made a joke that offended some people?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, how many?
It was a rough joke. I read it, and I was put off by it.
Well, first of all, let's, you know, I mean, I'm not going to go into the details of it, but she made a joke about, I guess I am going to go into the details of it, because otherwise people won't know what we're talking about. She made a joke about the fact that Barron is going to be the first homeschooled school shooter. You know,
oh, for crying out loud.
And here's the
thing. Yeah, it was a rough joke. I didn't like
it's a rough joke, but there's a reason why I think it hit such a chord with people. And this is going to be controversial, but I'm going to say it, and then you can fire me or suspend me.
For 30 days, 90 days?
No, indefinitely. But here's the thing. I think that it got a lot of outcry because it hit on something. It hit on a nerve because frankly, I think a lot of us have looked at Barron and wondered about him because we don't see him smiling a lot. We don't see him acting like what we would think is a typical child. Now, I'm not saying he's not typical, but I'm saying that I think because he's a little bit less gregarious than the other Trump children. I know that's not the right word, but you know what I'm saying.
Sure.
People have some thoughts about him. And I have a theory, by the way, about what's going on behind the scenes at SNL. I have a theory, and I have no evidence for this. This is just me speculating.
Okay, you go ahead and do that because I definitely need to refill my drink before I go any further.
Okay. Well, I have a theory that...
By the way, for those of you listening, that is my ice machine in the background.
Don't do it during my theory. I have a theory that people at NBC and maybe Lorne himself know the Trumps personally. I feel like I'm working, you know, at a comedy club with a bar in the background.
I'm sorry, Kevin.
Hey, DJ, you want to turn on the blender while we're doing this?
Doing dinner theater.
Yeah. DJ, do you need to slice some lemons or anything?
No lemon slicing. Just getting the ice for my
yeah,
for my refill of fire bourbon.
Okay, so
sorry.
So I have a theory about Barron Trump. I think that there are people at NBC and maybe Lorne who know the Trumps personally and may know something about Barron that is not public knowledge. And that might have, in their eyes, made what seemed like a benign joke a little bit more cruel, because there might be some truth to it.
Okay, here's what I would say. First of all, we're all talking about what that tweet did to the Trump family, or how it insulted a 10-year-old child. It also insulted every single person who has ever homeschooled their child at any point in their lives, including myself. No, I'm not kidding here. We homeschooled my oldest stepson for his senior year.
His grades jumped three grade levels.
Really?
It has nothing to do with homeschooling. It has to do with school shootings. It's the irony of someone who's homeschooled doing what kids in public schools do. It's not a criticism of homeschooling at all.
No, basically comparing Barron Trump to Adam Lanza.
Yes, exactly.
Who was homeschooled and shot his mother and then 20 other people. It's not funny.
You're taking on the entire comedy industry.
Should be off limits.
Comedy
anyway.
Takes on people. Comedy takes on people in power. And yes, sometimes that extends to the children of people in power.
What power does a 10-year-old have?
He is not
Joffrey Baratheon here. Okay?
DJ, you talked over my explanation.
His own. How often did comedians go after Chelsea Clinton when she was 13 and 14?
They never did. Yes, they did.
They just didn't hear about it.
Let me tell you something, DJ. You're wrong. Hold on, Cliff.
Clinton has come out in defense of Barron.
That's fine. But I am telling you, comedians made fun of Chelsea Clinton. Comedians made fun of Amy Carter, and comedians made fun of the Obama kids. You may have not been in the comedy clubs when they did it, but they were doing it, and comedy writers were making up jokes about it. Now, you know, this might have been a joke that she wrote for Weekend Update that got rejected, and she thought that she would just cowboy it on her Twitter feed. I don't know. She also, by the way, might have been suspended because she wasn't getting any material on the air, and this was a very convenient way for Lorne to lighten, you know, his budget. Believe me, that happens too. Okay?
Let's not get
sanctimonious about this, because a lot of comedy people are coming to Katie's defense. Yes, a lot of people are saying that she should not have said it or should not have tweeted it or she should be punished, but a lot of comedy people are coming to her defense.
All I would say is whatever jokes were made about the Clinton children and about the Obama children, none of them involved them shooting anybody as far as I know. Number two, in an era where you can be fired from the head of an internet tech company because you opposed same-sex marriage in a California referendum. The idea that your job is ever safe from something you say in 21st century America is utterly ridiculous.
Well, yes, I don't notice that Donald Trump's job has been threatened by any of the things he said, including making fun of a seriously handicapped reporter.
Yes, well, so, white men do get a certain amount of immunity, don't they?
Oh, yes, they do.
So, on that lighthearted note, everyone, thank you very much for listening. Please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast and share our link on your Facebook timeline so your friends can discover us as well. And if you enjoy political debates and would be like to be a part of ours, join us on Facebook in our political discussion group, Open Fire. We are all there and we'd love to see you there too. Until next time, have a great week.
I have a secret Tumblr account of things that my wife does that she has no idea. And every so often I add to it. I'm like, oh, by the way, she does this. Like, she hides clothes or she doesn't do this.
It's like you're preparing for her divorce lawyer on his behalf.
Oh, I know.